Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, May 27th, 2016. Amnesty International accuses South Sudan Army of holding civilians in detention centers under deplorable conditions.
This facility is under the authority of military intelligence. We believe that there are dozens of detainees who are held in this facility, that they are held in conditions that have resulted in the deaths of some detainees.
And human remains are found near Wau.
He says 10 people were killed in one place. He says UN officials believe dogs is scattered their bones and some of the remains still had ropes tied on their skeletons.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International says dozens of detainees are being held in what rights groups call dire conditions in poorly ventilated metal shipping containers. An Amnesty International researcher for South Sudan says the detainees are fed only once or twice a week, are given insufficient drinking water, and are at risk of dying. John Tanza reports for VOA from Washington.
In a report released today, Amnesty International says some of the detainees have been tortured to death at the Gorom detention site, located about 20 kilometers south of Juba. Amnesty International researcher for South Sudan, Elizabeth Deng, says a satellite image of the detention site at Gorom shows four metal shipping containers arranged in an L shape inside two perimeter fences. She says four of the containers brought to the site in early November 2015 are used to house the detainees.
This facility is under the authority of military intelligence. We believe that there are dozens of detainees who are held in this facility, that they are held in conditions that have resulted in the deaths of some detainees.
Amnesty International says the detainees are kept in a deplorable condition under South Sudan's scorching sun. Deng says an unspecified number of the detainees have died because of the inhumane conditions.
These shipping containers are not adequately ventilated. The detainees are given food only once or twice a week, and they are not given adequate water. They are also subjected to beatings.
Jock Madud Jock is a researcher with the SAD Institute, a Juba-based think tank that has been documenting events in South Sudan. Madud agrees that South Sudan has an unspecified number of people being held under appalling conditions, and that security officers are holding civilians at various detention centers across the country.
Some stories, some accounts speak of the civilian police in Juba detaining people for criminal activity but having no facilities where they can hold people, so they take them to national security, which has more facilities where these people can be held until they are arraigned in court.
Madud says South Sudan's national security have arrested a known number of people since the start of the conflict in the country 2 years ago. He says most testimonies taken from former detainees indicates that the South Sudan's national security operatives are responsible for picking up civilians and detaining them in many unknown locations.
Other stories speak of people that the national security people themselves pick up for political sabotage or other subversive activities, such as supporting the opposition forces. But what cannot be denied is the existence of some detention centers that are very, very unsanitary and inhuman as places to hold people.
Amnesty International says the detainees, most of whom are civilians and have not been charged with any offense, are accused of links to the former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, which is now part of the transitional government of national unity. Elizabeth says the detainees do not have access to family members, lawyers, or courts.
We are calling for the detainees to be released or charged and brought before independent courts. We also understand that some of the detainees are civilians, and we're calling for the release of all civilians because civilian detainees should only be held in civilian detention facilities and tried by civilian courts.
Amnesty International says it has written to Major General Marial Nour, Director of Military Intelligence, requesting additional information about the Gorom detention site, including the condition of the detention and the names of the individuals who are being held there and the names of those who have died. Last week, South Sudan's information minister denied the country's security forces are holding detainees in Juba. Michael Makui said South Sudan has released all political detainees arrested during the 2 years of conflict. Jock Madud disputes that claim. Madud says South Sudan's security forces are trigger-happy when they arrest people without any valid reasons. Madud says the government of South Sudan has turned against its people.
Hide behind this idea that the country must be protected. The national security of the country is paramount to individual rights. And the question we ask is protecting the national security of the country against whom? Surely it cannot be against its own people.
Earlier this week, Human Rights Watch released a report documenting atrocities committed by members of the South Sudan Army in Wau. The spokesman of South Sudan Army, Brigadier General Rul Roy Kong, later issued a statement denying any involvement in the Wau killing. Lula accused the New York-based Human Rights Watch of being biased against South Sudan Army. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza in Washington.
Elias Waya Nyapuch, the governor of the newly created Wau state, says his government has discovered human remains on the outskirts of Wau town. Nyapuch says the 12 bodies found are of unarmed civilians who were arrested and killed for being suspected of helping the SPLA in opposition on account of their ethnicity. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Wau.
Addressing civil servants at Wau Municipality today, Governor Waya said his government has documented more than 100 civilians who were allegedly killed by government soldiers when violence erupted in Wau 1 month after President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Dr. Riek Machar signed a peace deal in August. Governor Waya says 2 weeks ago, government and United Nations officials discovered the remains of 12 human beings southwest of Wau town. Speaking in Arabic, the governor says he asked the Catholic Church in Wau to bury the remains in a humane manner. He says 10 people were killed in one place. He says UN officials believe dogs scattered their bones and some of the remains still had ropes tied on their skeletons. Waya also says there were several other unidentified victims killed and thrown into water wells within residential areas of Jezira, Lokoloko, Haikamsin, and Jebel Ker, all because of their ethnicity. Waya wonders aloud why anyone could kill unarmed civilians. He is calling on South Sudan's military and political leaders to work hard to reform the army and other security institutions. Waya says if the army has done anything bad, it should be blamed on their leaders, either political leaders or military leaders or both. He says the government failed to train them on what nationalism means. He said it is also the government's fault if they don't give soldiers food or pay them their salaries. Right now, he says, we have 1,600 soldiers who are in Momoi and Abushaka who have no salary. Repeated calls to military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kong for comment on this story went unanswered. In a report released last week, Human Rights Watch accused the SPLA of similar killings in Wau County during its counter-insurgence operations. But Colonel Kong denied the army killed any unarmed civilians in the area. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Save the Children donated 7,350 kilos of food items, including millet, peas, salt, sugar, and porridge, to HIV-positive patients at Torit's main hospital yesterday. The initiative, which started last year during the hunger crisis, helps HIV/AIDS patients receive food and helps them continue taking their HIV antiretroviral treatment. As Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit, Save the Children is also encouraging people to come forward and get tested.
Betty Sebastian, the Torit community leader for people living with HIV/AIDS, says Save the Children donated millet, sugar, salt, and porridge to patients living with HIV. Sebastian says she hopes Save the Children will expand the initiative to reach other counties in the state. She says it would help a lot of sick people who are dying not from the disease but because of poor feeding.
I'm requesting the suppliers, the donors for this food, to also extend the same support to other counties so that they can also benefit through this dry season, because there is no food. People living with HIV has problem with food. They are vulnerable. They cannot support themselves getting food.
HIV patient Regina Iyolonga says the culture of heritage marriage in South Sudan is one of the causes of the spread of the disease. She says her husband got HIV/AIDS from his late brother's wife, and she contracted the disease through her husband. Speaking in Arabic, Regina says she appreciates the food support from Save the Children, but wishes her family could receive more.
For one thing, the millet is only a basket. If I am sick and there is a person who is taking care of me, will she or he not eat? At least let them give us two baskets of the millet so that someone who is taking care of me will eat and my kids can eat. The basket of millet cannot be enough for two people in a month.
Jacqueline Kuba Sekanda, a worker at the Torit Hospital, says South Sudanese men and women should come and get tested. Speaking in Arabic, she says when people hide their HIV status, that's when it can kill you.
You should take a medicine as a prescribed, stay happy, stay safe, and that is what I want to tell our people. Our people do not understand. Even on promotion for condom, they do not want to take and use them. And there are a lot of sick people in South Sudan now.
Authorities in Imotong State are calling on residents to come and test, and if they are found to be HIV positive, get treated. If they do so, Sekanda says they can leave to take care of their families. She says the number of positive people in Torit is 912, according to Torit Main Hospital. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Council of Ministers discusses the prickly issue of SPLAIO cantonment areas. Did they reach a solution? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you like newer music or older musical groups?
I like both, and I like good music. If it's good music and it's old, great. If it's new music and it's also good, great.
According to me, I just like newer music. Yeah, because the beat, I like dancing so much. Nowadays, beats are just sweet, you know.
The older ones, Kool and the Gang, the ABBA. Why? Because maybe I've heard them over and over again, and their message is, I think, weightier than what you hear nowadays.
It depends. Sometimes when I'm in my free time, I like to share old music, but I'm also a fan of new music, because I've heard much people say old is gone, but old is gold.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Transitional Government of National Unity says it has started discussions today on the issue of cantonment areas in Equatoria and Badal-Ghazal regions. The government's information minister says the Joint Monitoring Ceasefire Commission, or JMCC, has been directed to determine whether or not there are SPLMIO cantonment areas in Equatoria. Waki Simon-Mudu has the details for VOA from Juba.
Information Minister Michael Makuei told the journalists today shortly after a cabinet meeting chaired by President Salva Kiir ended today that the cabinet focused primarily on discussing the issue of cantonment areas of the SPLA-IO forces in the three regions of Upper Nile, Equatoria and Bahr el Ghazal. Makuei says they neither agreed nor disagreed that SPLA-IO have forces in Equatoria and Bahr el Ghazal regions. However, he says the cabinet has directed the Joint Monitoring Ceasefire Commission, the body charged with monitoring the implementation of the ceasefire process, to identify if there are any SPLA-IO cantonment areas in Equatoria.
This is the directive which was given, and because of time, the agenda could not be completed. There were other three issues which were in the agenda, but this is what took most of the time of the cabinet, so the meeting ended accordingly.
No time framework was provided as to when the JMCC would report back to the government regarding its findings on cantonment areas in Equatoria. But Makuei says the JMCC has been directed to immediately begin its work.
It was also agreed that the JMCC should sit down, determine the criteria for selection of cantonment area in Greater Equatoria. As for Bahr el Ghazal, this will be considered after looking into all these issues. Then the JMCC will also be the one to determine. If there are forces over there, then all these issues will be determined thereafter.
Makuei says if the SPLA-IO forces in Equatoria are to be given cantonment areas, they must have been involved in combat during the conflict before the peace agreement was signed. Representatives of the government and SPLA-IO have been at odds for months over whether to provide cantonment areas for the SPLA-IO forces, especially in Equatoria and Bahr el Ghazal regions. Earlier, the government, allied with the President Salva Kiir, denied that there are any SPLA-IO forces in the two regions of Equatoria and Bahr el Ghazal. The SPLA-IO insists they do have forces in the two regions and they are supposed to be given cantonment areas under the security arrangements agreed to in the peace deal. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hundreds of Wau Town residents have taken up farming in residential areas. The residents, who say they are unable to go to their farms outside of town due to the rampant insecurity in the area, are now growing outside of their family compounds and on road reserves so they have something to eat. But other residents complain the practice is making it hard to drive into residential areas as the roads have become too narrow. While municipal authorities also warn that farming in residential areas will lead to an increase in the spread of diseases such as malaria. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Wau.
Charles Abdallah Okello is digging with a hand hoe outside his fence in Wau's Haimatamadie residential area. Okello says he wants to plant okra and maize as the rainy season starts in Wau. Okello says he is not able to go to his farm in Natabu area, some 2 kilometers west side of Wau town, due to insecurity along the road. Speaking in Arabic, he says he decided to plant some vegetables around his fence so that he can feed his children.
All the roads are closed and risky. I can't go to my farm anymore. I am afraid, because if I do that, either I am killed or slaughtered. I have to plant some vegetables around my fence here in the town so my kids can get some food. Instead of going and waste my life in the bush, I better do this.
Okello says he used to grow cassava, sorghum, groundnuts, and other crops before fighting broke out in the area last year. He says he would love to grow several crops, but the space around his home is limited. 30-year-old Sura Francis Nukta, a mother of four who fled fighting in Busere 3 months ago, says she would love to farm but has no plot of land. Speaking in Arabic, she says instead she has been working for other residents who are growing crops around their homes so she can earn some money to feed her children.
I came to Wau and I did not find a place to plant some vegetables. I'm renting a room, but there is not enough space to plant. So I came to Wau and I became a farm worker to others.
Nukta says whenever she helps a resident plant vegetables in a space measuring 10 by 10 meters, she gets paid 50,000 Sudanese pounds. Nukta says she hopes that the government will soon improve security in her village so she can go back to farm her own land in Busere. 33-year-old David Michael owns a car in Wau's Nazareth residential area. He says he is not opposed to residents farming around their homes, but is concerned that some residents are encroaching on the road. Michael says he finds it difficult to drive in some of the residential areas for fear of destroying crops that are planted too close to the road.
Road access to be so difficult for me to walk out at night to drop somebody or to go and pick something. So for us, those who have a vehicle, it's really a challenge. We are not again on a small garden, but not to be within the areas because actually it's close the road to be small.
Mayor of Wau Town, Akol Ajit, says farming within the residential areas attracts many insects such as mosquitoes, which can carry malaria. Ajit says, according to the Universal Urban Planning Rules, farms should be located at least 12 kilometers outside of town.
As a mayor, I would say cultivating within the town is not allowed, but we allow it to be far away from the town. But if you want to cultivate within your plot, that is okay, but it should not be on the road. People are allowed to plant vegetables, which does not grow long, otherwise we are inviting mosquitoes to ourselves.
While residents say if the government would restore security in neighboring villages, people would not have to plant crops along the road. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
In what Doctors Without Borders is calling a first, two large outbreaks of cholera and chikungunya are overwhelming local health services in northeastern Kenya. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
In Kenya's Mandera County, 12 deaths from cholera have been reported since April, in an outbreak that has been ongoing for about 17 months, according to Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF. Almost 800 cases have been reported during this period, concentrated in Mandera Township. Lisbeth Albrecht is MSF's Kenya country director.
It is rather devastating in the sense also that it coincides with a parallel confirmed chikungunya outbreak. For us as an organization, it's a first, at least to see two large outbreaks coinciding.
MSF says this is the sixth time in 6 months that it has deployed teams to assist with the cholera outbreak in the northeastern region. MSF notes the Mandera Referral Hospital has been overwhelmed by cholera patients and that health facilities will continue to struggle as chikungunya patients also seek treatment. Chikungunya, a mosquito-borne disease that is painful but seldom fatal, is affecting even medical staff here. MSF suspects about 80% of hospital staff are infected. Kenya's Ministry of Health reports 260 suspected cases of chikungunya in the northeast, with 7 confirmed by laboratory tests. Albrecht urged a better government response at the local and national levels, saying that greater investment in proper water and sanitation for the population is needed. Mandera County's Minister of Health, Ahmed Mohamed, says the government is doing the best it can, especially given Mandera's proximity to both Ethiopia and Somalia.
So we've done quite a lot on our part, but unfortunately, again, especially on the side of the Somali side, there isn't, you know, a strong health system that can be able to handle this kind of infection. So it is like, you know, really, we are fighting a battle that maybe we don't know where the head is.
The Ministry of Health has reported more than 15,000 cholera cases nationwide since the outbreak began in late 2014. Mortality rates are usually low for chikungunya, but severe fever and joint pain mean it can take about a week for patients to recover. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Cameroon is mourning the death of iconic singer Anne-Marie Nzi after she succumbed to illness Tuesday. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé, where fans continue to gather at her home to bid farewell to the 84-year-old artist known as the Golden Voice of Cameroon.
Loudspeakers blast the music of Cameroon's legendary artist Anne-Marie Nzi, a style known as Bikutsi. She lived in a neighborhood called De La Cité Verte, or the Green City. Fans have been flocking here to pay tribute. Abraham Gwa came with hundreds of members of her university music club.
I grew up listening to Anne-Marie Nzi. I grew up dancing to her tunes, like Liberté, Liberté. Anne-Marie Nzi was the queen mother of Cameroonian music.
Liberté was by far her most popular song. It was a song of rebellion, originally composed in the 1960s as Cameroon and other African countries were shaking off colonial rule. Throughout her long career, Nzi used music to advocate for self-determination and defend human rights. She got her start singing in the church choir as a girl and then began performing in nightclubs as a young adult. Fellow artists say she was a powerful mentor. Ate Bazor is a promoter of Cameroon's traditional music.
When I worked with her on several occasions, we played. The Anne-Marie Nzi I met was not the proud type who would look low on the younger artists. She was like a mother.
Nzi died just 2 weeks before a concert local musicians planned in her honor, but her golden voice lives on. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And we end our show this Friday with more from the golden voice of Cameroon, the late Anne-Marie Nzi, with her song Beza Badzo. We've been listening to Anne-Marie Nzi with the song Beza Badzo. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. Have a safe weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sabato,